Here we go.
Right, welcome to That Movie Podcast.
I'm Alex.
I'm Quincy.
All right, so here we are, kicking off the last show in November.
Yep, Now Playing.
All right, so Now Playing. We've got a film called Chinese Takeaway. It's fresh off the festival circuit. It's an Argentinian film.
Any known actors?
Not in this country, no.
Well, that's... we're not international yet, buddy, so... No known actors. All right, what's it about?
Basically, it's this story of how these two men just sort of cross paths, and it's all kind of tied into this rather ironic event that I'm not going to spoil, but...
What genre?
Kind of a lighthearted drama.
Like a dramedy?
You could call it that, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it sounds like a rental?
Very well could be, yeah.
Okay.
In your case, yeah.
It's not playing in mainstream theaters, right? It's the art house?
Yeah, yeah.
Gotcha. Cool.
Let's see.
It worth seeing?
It was, yeah. I mean, it's not going to change your life, but, you know, yeah, for what it was, I enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty good. Another one fresh off the festival circuit is The Imposter, directed by Bart Layton.
Are you sure?
Fairly certain. And, basically, it's the story of Frederick Bourdin.
Oh, he's good.
He's actually he's a pathological liar who's, you know, wanted by Interpol. But yeah, he basically convinces this family in Texas that he is their child that's been missing for the last 3 years. You know, he's trying to like...
Last 3 years?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He's been missing for like 3 years, and all of a sudden they get this phone call from an embassy over in Spain saying, hey, we found your child, you know, if you want to come get him. Cool. And so he's just sitting there trying to think of anything that he can. You know, he starts looking at the poster and he's like having to bleach his hair and come up with all these kinds of excuses as to why, you know.
He doesn't look anything like their son.
Yeah.
After 3 years. But the family kind of buys it?
The family buys into it. And
it's based on a true story, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like I said, it's a documentary.
Oh, it's a documentary.
Yeah. It's a documentary, but it does have like... reenactment actors and everything else, so it's,
you know, oh, gotcha.
Yeah, you will be seeing, you know, such and so played by such and so.
Gotcha.
But yeah, it's pretty interesting, you know, especially when you think that this is...
sounds like a very interesting story.
Yeah, you know, when you start thinking about, wow, this really happened, you know, and it's like these people were so desperate to believe that their child was there, that they're, because you look at the guy, you're just going, no.
Yeah.
You know? And he's coming up with excuses left and right, and you're kind of going, well, yeah, I could probably buy into that, but it's just like, wow, okay. It's like, And then later he starts coming up with some theories of his own as to why they were wanting to believe that, you know, he was their son, because even he's just sitting there going, I can't believe I got away with it for as long as I did.
Mm.
But,
it definitely sounds like one to check out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like I said, it's pretty interesting.
Cool. I look forward to looking at that one.
Yeah. Kind of a leftover from back in October that I never got around to because I was too busy watching other horror films. But The Perks of Being a Wallflower. Oh, man. It was...
best known as the new one with Emma Watson.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. It was written, directed, based off the novel by Stephen Chbosky. I mean, the guy did everything but star in the damn thing. You know, he left that to Logan Larman, who you may remember from the Percy Jackson movies.
I try not to.
Okay, well, for those of you out there who have seen the Percy Jackson films, you know, yeah.
Well, he wasn't Percy Jackson, or was he?
Yeah, he was. Then, it's like Ezra Miller, who was Andy Garcia's son in, I think, City Island was one of his better-known films.
Is he also the kid that was in We Need to Talk About Tevin?
Yeah. Yeah, he was Kevin.
That's Tevin?
Yeah.
Or Kevin?
Kevin.
Kevin?
Yeah, he was Kevin.
Okay, yeah. He has a very interesting screen presence.
Mm-hmm.
He really helped sell that We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever see that?
I've seen parts of it. I've not really seen it all the way through. I keep meaning to
check it out. Down.
Yeah, that's why I keep.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, because I'll kind of. I think I found it on cable one time, and I was just like, "Wow, this looks really cool." Wait, I'm going to watch this from the beginning. So
yeah, that was a good choice.
Yeah, of course, Emma Watson's in it. Tom Savini plays a shop teacher.
Nice.
Paul Rudd plays his English teacher. Dylan McDermott and Kate Walsh play his parents.
I've heard it's really good.
Yeah, it is. And
it's a dramedy as well, right? Kind of a coming of age.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's, like I say, it's really good. I was really impressed with the story. The soundtrack is just absolutely incredible. And I mean that in a positive way, not in the I'm trying to find something positive to say about this movie kind of way.
So it's not like it has a good personality.
Exactly. Gotcha. It's not like, you're walking out of something just going,
the poster was really cool.
That was okay, but man, that soundtrack rocked. It's like, yeah, no, it's not like that. It's just like, wow, what a cool story. And it's got a really cool soundtrack.
Bonus.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see. After that, Smashed.
I heard you have to legally be drunk to go see that movie. Is that true?
It probably couldn't hurt. Although you probably walk out feeling guilty. This is another one of those, kind of like Flight, it's like where the alcoholics are bad kind of movie. It's like, I don't know. Go figure. But yeah, Mary Elizabeth Winstead plays the title character. The easiest way I can think to explain it,
it's a prequel to Barfly. That's what it looks like.
See, personally,
it's like Barfly, the early years.
Yeah, no shit. Well, it's Barfly if Faye Dunaway dried out, but no, it's kind of like the.
Let's go with the assumption that the dry out period eventually ends. She kicks into full on Barfly mode.
Well, if you think of like a role reversal of like the Days of Wine and Roses, and then you tack on a happier ending. It's Smashed.
Oh, well, there you go.
So, yeah. It's, again, it's not going to change your religion. It's worth taking a look at,
I definitely don't pay theater prices. That's a no.
Yeah.
Because you're usually real quick to promote the theater-going experience, if you hesitate,
go for the cheap seats. If you do happen to see it at home, you're not going to miss that much. Unfortunately, a lot of these movies that are coming out lately, you're getting a lot of good performances
and mediocre scripts.
Actors, but yeah, it's like the scripts are just kind of like, okay.
The story doesn't really know where
exactly.
To go.
The storyline is engaging, but just enough to give the actor something to do.
Sure.
So, yeah, there's a lot of good performances in this movie. Like I said, you got Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Aaron Paul plays her husband. He does a really good job.
That's the kid from Breaking Bad?
I believe so. I don't really watch that show that much, so.
Well, I'll just state it and let it be known.
There you go.
It is the kid from Breaking Bad.
Okay.
There you go.
There it is. Octavia Spencer, who, won the Best Supporting Actress last year for The Help.
Yeah, she's funny.
Nick Offerman. Plays, her co-worker that kind of gets her into the whole program, so.
Yeah, best known as Ron Swanson.
I'll take your word on that. It sounds like another television show.
Parks and Rec.
Okay. I'm familiar that there's a show called Parks and Rec, but that's about as far as it goes.
That's a crying shame. Anyway, we'll stick to that movie podcast material.
There you go.
Watch Parks and Rec. Go ahead.
Let's see. Next up, Cloud Atlas.
That's the latest from the Wachowski brother and sister now.
Yeah, and Tom Twyker.
That almost tricked me. Seeing his name was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And then I saw it was like, what? It's like 4.5 hours long, and you have to apply for a patent in the next state to be able to sit in the theater.
Not quite that long, but it's like 2 hours and 40 or something like that.
How long does it feel, though? Tell me honestly.
It really feels like about 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Now, is that a good?
It's not a bad thing. I was really kind of hesitant, but I'm like, okay, it's like I'll take one for the team. It kind of intrigued me enough, and I was able to.
Yeah, I was kind of intrigued about it as well, so I'm glad that you did take one for the team.
Yeah.
Did you take it for the team, or would you recommend the team going and seeing it?
If you can.
The team being you and I. So I guess, should I go see it, Alex?
I'd wait till it comes on Netflix.
Okay.
So
that's kind of the vibe I was getting. Yeah. That way that's a Blu-rayer.
Yeah. That way, when you get bored with it, you can just turn it off. So
yeah. Sounds good.
Because yeah, I'm not going to say it's like 2 hours and 40 minutes of just sheer engagement, but it's one of those.
Well, I've heard that like some of the stories are really interesting and yeah. some of them not so much.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. It does. It just completely interweaves itself. It's all about just
how everyone's interconnected.
Kind of, yeah, the whole interconnection. It's almost like a.
It's the one with Tom Hanks and Halle Berry, for people that might not know what
everybody
we're talking about.
And their mothers in this. Tom Hanks, Halle Berry, Jim Broadbent, Hugo Weaving, Jim Sturgess, Duna Bree. Ben Whishaw, Keith David, James Darcy, Zun Shao.
You know, that just that lends
Susan
to my
Sarandon,
theory
Hugh Grant, you know,
that the Wachowski brothers are actually loan sharks. And instead of getting paid back, they're like, you'll be in the next movie.
Yeah.
You'll be in Cloud Atlas. You'll be okay. We'll let the loan go.
Yeah.
I think
it's like all these people are playing like multiple roles, so it's kind of, you know, it keeps it interesting.
Yeah.
It kind of explores the theory of reincarnation. But yeah, like I said, it's interesting. That's the cool thing about...
You realize that the people that might have been interested in seeing this movie now since you said it's about reincarnation...
It's not
they've
so
They've dropped like two-thirds of them, they're like, oh, never mind.
Well, it's not just about reincarnation, but it's...
But it is the vibe. It's kind of how yeah, everyone's interconnected.
Exactly.
Time.
Exactly. You know, so, I mean, it's one of those things that it's like, if you don't like this story, just keep watching, because, you know, in 5 minutes, it's going to, you know, kind of move around. It doesn't necessarily just move in a linear...
Gotcha.
Line, so, you know, like I said, it's worth a look.
Yeah.
You know, if you find yourself after the first Rent hour, it. You're just not that into it, yeah, stop it.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
There you go.
You know, but it is one that I would recommend, just because it does, I mean, once you get to the end of it, you're just going, oh, okay. You know, it's not going to grab you like halfway through and you're going to go, okay, I see where this is going. All right, and we're going to get there. You're just like, you know, it's, you really do just kind of have to take it all in because... Yeah, I'll admit, about 2 hours into it, I'm just kind of going, is this movie about over? But then, yeah, once the credits started rolling, I just started thinking back on them, going...
One too bad.
I get it now. Okay. Okay. Yeah. So, stick with it. A Late Quartet came out earlier this month. It's the first feature from Yaron Zilberman. It's got Philip Seymour Hoffman, Mark Ivanor, Catherine Keener, and Christopher Walken. They play, obviously, the quartet. Christopher Walken, they've been together, this quartet has been together for like 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
But Christopher Walken's just found out that he's got Parkinson's. So they're trying to find a replacement for him as they're going into the new season.
So it sounds like the feel-good movie of the year.
Pretty much, yeah. You know, it's there's a little more to it, but, you know, the nutshell.
Is it as heavy-handed as the synopsis came across?
No, it's not. I mean, it's... Again, it's just it's kind of a character study, you know.
Is it lighter, or is it? Do they go for the sentimentality?
They don't really hit you with the sentimentality. Okay. You know, it's handled well.
Okay.
So, you know, and then of course, the theory of, wow, what great performances, but what an okay storyline, Lincoln. The new Spielberg film. It's one of those things that, you know, you've got Daniel Day-Lewis, Sally Field, David Strathairn, of course, my personal Lord and Savior, Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Tommy Lee Jones.
Tommy Lee Jones, Hal Holbrook, Jackie Earle Haley. I mean, there's like just a grocery list of people that are in this film, and they all do an incredible job. But at the end of the day...
Is there a twist ending?
Well, let's not give anything away.
Yeah. It's like, I mean,
you know,
it's not hard to figure out.
It's, you know, it's I mean, it is interesting in the fact that it is just about how Lincoln is trying to push the 13th Amendment through to abolish slavery.
Before resolving the war.
Before resolving the war, when all the southern states will come in and go, uh-oh, we ain't doing that.
Sure.
You know, and... It is just interesting to see all the behind-the-scenes politicking that went on and how they had to get lobbyists and go out and try and get the Democrats, essentially, to change, you know, their votes and to come around to the abolitionist side of, you know, slavery.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's not a complete just, you know, wow, okay, I didn't see that coming. You know, it does kind of hold your interest, especially if you haven't read the book or anything like that, you know. But... you know, it's like, yeah, am I saying rush out and go see it? No, but
my theory is if like that said, preview could not hold my attention.
Yeah, if the preview's not holding your attention, yeah, just say no to the movie. But yeah, it does have a lot of solid performances.
I'm sure it does.
Half these people will be in the next Academy Awards. So,
I'm sure they will.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that Daniel Day-Lewis could pretty much be filmed taking a dump for 2 hours in the Academy and be like, oh, man, it's the best thing he's ever done.
Ever,
let's
yes.
just give him to the award now.
Pretty much, yeah. So,
yeah, I mean, he does uncannily look like Lincoln.
Oh, yeah.
And he's a great actor, don't get me wrong.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean,
it's... but after a while, it's kind of like, oh, he's good in the movie? Really? Big shock.
I know.
Wow, Daniel Day-Lewis was good.
Yeah. That's like when De Niro was picking up all the awards. Like, well, really, you're telling me that De Niro's a good actor? Seriously?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
That was a long time ago. You kind of dated yourself by making that statement.
Hey, he still makes movies.
He does.
Yeah.
No, I noticed you left the adjective good out of that sentence. Yeah. Yeah, so we'll just move on.
Well, what is that, Silver Linings Playbook or whatever that is? That might not suck. That
De Niro's in that?
Yeah. He plays...
well, he's not starring in it, that's why it might not suck.
He plays what's-his-name's father.
Bradley Cooper?
Yeah, Bradley Cooper's father.
Yeah, that movie looks interesting.
Yeah.
So anyway.
All right. And then finally we have The Sessions, which is the latest one from Ben Lewin, who wrote and directed it. And it's got John Hawkes. He plays Mark O'Brien. It's based off a true story.
It's basically the guy in the iron lung who wants to lose his virginity. Does
yeah,
not.
Yeah. John Hawkes, who was also in Lincoln. but
I really like him as an actor.
Yeah. Did you ever see Me and You and Everyone You Know?
Nope.
It's pretty good. Take a look at that sometime.
Yeah, I loved him in Winter's Bone.
Yeah.
He was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And he was really good in Mary, Marcy, May, Marlene, or whatever that movie. The four-name movie with Elizabeth Olsen.
Yeah.
It's really good. It's a good movie. It's just one of the worst titled movies in the world. It's just impossible. I can't remember all that gibberish.
Yeah.
All that hoobandaloob.
Yeah. All right, it's got Helen Hunt as the sex surrogate, and then William H. Macy plays as priest. And, of course, being William H. Macy, he's amazing, so...
So for you, I mean, don't you feel like William H. Macy pretty much plays William H. Macy in every damn movie, though? I mean, I used to think he was a really good actor, and then I'm just kind of like, okay, he's just doing the same thing every time.
Yeah.
He's William H. Macy. He's not a really good actor. He's a cool dude.
Yeah.
Which he seems like a really cool dude.
Yeah, he's
but he's not a good actor.
He's kind of getting by on the Nicholson thing, so he just kind of shows up in each movie, plays, plays himself, and is moving on.
Yeah.
Loved him in State and Main. That's always been one of my favorite performances from him.
Yeah, he was good in that. I liked him in The Cooler a lot.
Yeah.
Fargo, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, he's... it's the exact same thing.
Just rattle off any movie. Point. It's like, William H. Macy is great.
He picks great projects.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I love the guy. I thought he was great, but
But he could easily become a Val Kilmer.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. He's a couple... Straight to DVDs away.
A couple of bad roles away.
Yeah.
Bam!
Yep.
All right.
Who would have thought that Batman would have been that for... Anyway. So we're going to finally move on. Since Alex has finished his 59 movies that he saw, and I've seen one.
Hey, it's like the last show, you had to carry the ball, so this time around, I thought I better step up.
So, yep. So,
I still have two more shows to go, but...
Silence for the intro. There you
go. All right, so we have Skyfall, the latest James Bond film, directed by Sam Mendes this time around, the same guy that did American Beauty, Road to Perdition.
Just stop. Is there another one he did that you liked?
Jarhead. I thought Jarhead was really good.
Yeah. I thought Jarhead was very much like Skyfall. It's like, oh, it's a war movie.
Written by... Neil Purvis and Robert Wade, who basically have done like the last four Bond films.
Mm.
So, they kind of know where they're going and see their pattern. Of course, you got Daniel Craig.
Great Bond.
Yeah,
He's a great Bond. He's really kind of brought some machismo back.
Mm-hmm.
And he's made him believable in he walks down the street and you're like, yeah, he's cool.
Yeah.
You buy it.
Yeah.
And that's important.
It took me through Casino Royale to get used to basically an Aryan Bond. You know, blonde hair, blue eyed. I'm just kind of going, no, Bond's got brown hair and brown eyes. No, but Daniel Craig has blonde hair and blue eyes. Okay, I'm used to it now. Okay, all right, I can do, you know, so by this movie, I'm kind of getting into the swing of things. I'm like, all right, you know.
You know, I mean, I think before we dive in, I should at least declare, just for the listening audience, exactly where on the scale of Bond fan I fall. To where you should, you know, okay. As a kid, I loved him.
Yeah.
I saw all of them. Once Roger Moore quit, I literally have not seen a single one.
Wow.
Everyone was going goo goo gaga over Casino Royale with Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
So I rented it. I got bored about halfway through and turned it off.
Really?
So I'm not the world's biggest Bond fan. I think that they're all the same. And while watching Skyfall, I was still like, I feel like I've seen this before. I mean, was it just me or was Silva pretty much Loki? I mean, I'm sorry, but that's all. I mean, there was like so many times I kept thinking of like these other movies while I was watching Skyfall, and I'm like, wait, Loki just did that earlier this summer. Give himself up just so he can get in there and further his plan while everyone thinks that they caught him. And yeah. I don't know. I mean, it wasn't bad. Is that kind of the tone, though? That, because I thought that it kind of took a more serious tone, starting with Casino Royale. At least that's how people have been pimping him, but I thought that this one was pretty bad. I mean,
through Casino Royale,
he was like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
How about a light?
Yeah, you had Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace, which really just went in a completely different direction. And then, I guess, I don't know, this maybe because they're wanting to do a couple of more, maybe because they just needed the money.
What I've read, I read an interview with Sam Mendes, and he was intentional. Him and Daniel Craig both were intentional about bringing back the jokey, quippy dude, and that, and what Daniel Craig said was that was always his plan, and his intentions was to start him off dark. I guess he starts pretty dark. And to lighten him up to where in this movie he kind of becomes the James Bond that everyone knows. And that he's more comfortable in his skin. And
okay.
But to me, as kind of an outsider coming in, I don't know, a lot of it seemed like it was setting up for his retirement and them to bring in a new Bond with all the him being really old. And
that, yeah.
I didn't understand the, like, all of a sudden he realized there was shrapnel in there and that would be able to lead him to where he needed. I mean, it really, for me, a lot of it just was like Dark Knight Rises, to where I was like, man, this is really handy. And I know that Bond always kind of walked that line. I guess my issue is, you know how much shit I get for liking horror movies?
Yeah.
And having an open mind when a sequel comes out, but yet every person is so fucking excited anytime the new James Bond, and no one ever stops and is like, these are all the same.
Yeah.
These are nothing but just sequel, but because they don't put a Roman numeral, or they'll mix it up, like, and change the Bond every now and then, people are fine with it. And they just embrace it, and you never hear anything bad about it. Well, I'm here to throw down the flag. I'm throwing bullshit on the Bond franchise.
Wow.
Okay.
It's just remaking itself. I mean, really, I thought them bringing back the car and having all that, I was like, what? Where did this even come from? I don't know.
I'll admit, I'm a fan. It was kind of cool to see the Aston Martin come back, but yet at the same time, I'm just kind of thinking, it's like, wow, that's just tying it back into everything that you were
attempting to get away from
when you hit the reboot button, but now you're just dragging it all back in. I'm just kind of going, okay, so what you're telling me, that Bond really has been around for the last 50 years? Because I thought we were starting fresh.
Yeah.
You know, so in which case, you know, Bond should be drawing Social Security by this point.
Yeah.
You know, but, and I realize it was kind of a, you know.
Or if like, they established that, like, 007 and Bond is just like a name of an agent that kind of takes, you know, or something like that. But yeah, I agree. By them, like, bringing, like, the, and, like, making Moneypenny show up. It was just like, by them doing that, it was like, wait, is this way back then, but it's modern, but he knew about this car and the, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I don't claim to be, you know, because I haven't followed any of them.
Okay.
You know, so, I mean, I haven't seen them since I was young.
Yeah.
And, you know, and there's definitely, you know, I love Goldfinger. I love, there's plenty of them that I've seen plenty of times. So what do you think of Skyfall?
I enjoyed it. You know, I didn't go, like, absolutely bonkers over it, but
A lot of people are.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people are like, oh, this is the best one since Goldfinger. Mm. And I'm like, well, I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
that's saying something.
I mean, I definitely enjoyed it. But
okay,
I agree to an extent with everything you've pretty much set up with all the problems as far as, you know, it's like you're introducing Moneypenny, you're bringing back the Aston Martin. You know, they've got Bond doing all the quips again. I'm just kind of going, weren't we kind of getting away from all this when we hit the reboot button?
Yeah.
You know, I was slightly disappointed to see him kind of wandering back in that direction, because I was really enjoying where Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace was going. You know, I was like, wow, this is cool. Because that was like almost the Bond from the books. And I was just going, wow, this is like really just gritty and interesting and almost realistic.
Uh-huh, sure.
You know, and now, yeah, like you said, I mean, it's kind of wandering back into almost a comic book level, and you're just kind of going, you guys are really onto something there. But it's like, okay, now we're just getting back to the old familiar Bond. I'm like, all right. And I'm, you know, they said at the, you know, end of the credits, like, you know, Bond will be back, and I'm sure my butt will be back in the seat too, so, you know.
I don't think mine will be.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it did it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one thing. I mean, Skyfall, their marketing campaign was successful enough to make me actually go pay money to see a Bond film again in the theater.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was really crowded, and they're playing it in a little tiny theater, and the volume sucked, so that definitely, you know, impacted my enjoyment of this movie.
Yeah.
Because I don't enjoy sitting, like, hobnobbing with Leroy Jenkins right next to me, right in front of me, you know what I mean, on a Saturday morning. Actually, it was a Sunday morning. I'm like, ain't you people supposed to be in church? What the hell's wrong with everyone? This country's going to shit. What do you think of him, Javier?
Javier, yeah.
As a bad guy,
I thought it was interesting. You know, because he wasn't your atypical Bond villain who's just out to extort money from, you know, the world governments to further his own means. I mean, he was.
But what was he really trying to do exactly?
Just
what was the whole "remember your sin" thing?
Basically, M just had given him up and had left him to die, and
so he was just waiting for her to confess it to Bond, because that's pretty much all that happened. And then he decided to go to the house and kill her.
Pretty much, yeah. He was just like slowly, you know, kind of manipulating her and just kind of playing with her. And then, yeah, it's like.
But it's not like she ever had to like publicly admit it or anything. I thought that that's what was going to come out in those hearings, and then nope, bad guys show up, they start bing bang bing, and
no, it was all just about. But by that point, it was just about taking her out. So, you know.
Yeah. I was like, well, you know, you seemed pretty smart at the beginning.
Yeah.
But then once, like, your plan kind of shows itself, you're like, you're kind of a short-sighted idiot, aren't you? I mean, you could have just killed her anytime if that's what you were going for. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I thought he's always effective, though, especially as, like, a creep.
Oh, yeah.
But I also found his eyebrows very distracting. Was it just me?
Quite possibly. I don't remember his eyebrows.
Man, just that they were really bushy, and they looked like an appliance, like an application, which I don't blame him, because I wouldn't want to dye my real eyebrows that color either.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know, it made his face look weird.
Hmm. Yeah, I was willing to go with it.
Sure. Yeah, and I understand.
Yeah.
It's like, now I'm just trying to picky things.
So yeah.
Let's just end it.
Fair enough.
All right.
So, see it at your own risk then. Yes.
If you're a fan, definitely go see it.
Oh, yeah.
It seems like everyone's enjoying it. I know I'm the odd man out, but say a lot, V.
Yeah.
Bam.
All right, and since we're on the subject of James Bond, that brings us to our next topic.
The book is better!
This time around, I went with License to Kill, from 1989, by John Gardner. This was essentially the first movie adaptation since everything up to that point had been based off of an Ian Fleming story. John Gardner had taken over the series in 1981 with License Renewed, and he pretty much did about 16 books. He left the series in 96 due to esophageal cancer, and then, oddly enough, he ended up dying in 2007 of heart failure. But as far as License to Kill, It is pretty much, like I said, an adaptation of the script. He did tweak a few things. He did address the fact that Felix Leiter was previously attacked by sharks in Live and Let Die. So, you know, he's sitting there trying to explain how, you know, the horror of a second shark attack was, you know, kind of something that didn't happen every day. Unfortunately, there is still the let's roll the semi-truck onto nine wheels. But, yeah, it's Bond, so you just go with it. If you like the movie, you know, it's like, check it out. It's a fun read. You know, it's only like 18 chapters, so, you know, won't check
it out. And it's better than the movie.
I would say, yeah. I don't know if I necessarily... I mean, it's at least as good. I'll put it that way. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, maybe we need to rename this. Maybe the book is as good.
Yeah, because, I mean, it is a little more interesting just in the fact that, you know, it does go into, you know, the thought processes and everything else that go along with it. So you're almost... It gives you a little more meat to bite into so that you're able to buy into a little more than just... yeah, for the sake of the film, we're going to say that really happened. Yes, of course that happened. It's Bond. You know, you don't get as many of those moments that you do in the film, you know, in the book, so...
Well, there you go. In that regard... That makes it better.
There you go. Just watched.
There's no such thing as an evil turkey. There's no such thing as an evil turkey.
This little baby bunny got its stomach gnawed open by a beak. Not just any beak. A turkey beak.
There's no such thing as an evil turkey. There's
no such thing as an evil turkey. Oh, wait. I lied.
Well.
How about that?
That was our Just Watched.
Yep.
It's called Thanksgiving.
Yep. Directed by Jordan Downey. Also written by Jordan Downey and Kevin Stewart. Jordan Downey also was the puppet and voice of Turkey. Turkey. The main character, our serial killer, if you will.
This movie is about a killer turkey, people.
Yeah, it's a necromanced turkey.
It was basically brought back from a shaman to avenge essentially the country being taken.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Every Thanksgiving it goes around and kills...
Yeah,
it's real dumb. I mean, it was
basically it bridges the gap between Troll 2 and Troma.
It does, and it bridges it pretty well. Yeah, it's really bad. This turkey says one-liners before he kills. He cusses. Mm-hmm. He loves boobs.
Yeah. In fact, oddly enough, speaking of Troma, Lindsay Anderson, who plays Kristen, the good girl. Was the only other person basically who made another movie, and that movie was Terror Firmer.
Oh.
From Troma. So, yeah.
A movie infamous in its own right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, if you like bad movies, definitely check out Thanksgiving.
I had a good time with it.
Yeah, me too.
Special feature. So this week, we thought, get y'all in the holiday spirit as y'all are sitting around the table with the loved ones. A little something y'all can check out. Some holiday-themed films. First up, we've got Alice's Restaurant, directed by Arthur Penn, who also was responsible for... oddly enough, he directed Bonnie and Clyde right before this. Then he did Alice's Restaurant, and then went on to do Little Big Man. So, it's got a good pedigree going there. The movie stars Arlo Guthrie as, oddly enough, Arlo Guthrie. Yes, it is all about the song, Alice's Restaurant Massacre. Patricia Quinn is the title character of Alice. You may remember her as Belle Starr from Zachariah, another quality film you should check out, but it's not holiday related, so we ain't talking about it right now. Also, keep an eye out for M. Emmett Walsh, who's the Group W Sergeant basically you've got everybody else pretty much playing themselves in this movie. Officer Obi is Officer Obi. The judge, again, you know, playing himself. It's a good time. If you've enjoyed the song, you know, the holiday traditional classic.
So what's it about? Is it about, like, people that go in and kill a bunch of people in a dire? Yeah. And something like that?
Yeah.
That sounds like it's a great holiday movie.
It's a killer turkey. Wait, no, not. it's basically, you know, just they've had this big Thanksgiving feast, and so as a token of kindness, Arlo and his buddy pack all the garbage into this VW microbus, and they take it down to the dump, but the dump is closed on Thanksgiving, so they have to go and they find someplace else. And unfortunately, they get busted going someplace else. And, or I should say, they get spotted when they're dumping the garbage someplace else. So, you know, Officer Obi, being the local town constable, goes and looks through and happens to find an envelope that has Arlo's name and address on it. So he calls him up and invites him down to the police station.
Do we got a Cliff Notes version of this?
Yeah, it's called The Song. So, yeah.
Okay, well, I guess I'll listen to the song
to determine
if I give a shit about seeing this movie.
There you go.
Because it sounds like I don't. So, all right, next one.
It's fun. All right, next up.
So it's like a comedy?
Yeah, it's okay. A comedy. It's got some dramatic moments to it, you know, but yeah, it's, for the most part, it's, you know, it's humorous. Next up, we got Hannah and Her Sisters from 1986, written and directed by Woody Allen. Stars Mia Farrow as Hannah. Diane Wiest and Barbara Hershey play her sisters. Michael Caine, or, you know, plays Elliot, her husband. Max von Sydow, interesting choice to play Barbara Hershey's live-in boyfriend. And then Woody Allen is Hannah's ex-husband. It's rather, you know, it's a fun character study, you know, in the traditional Woody Allen style. Starts basically Thanksgiving pretty much bookends the film. Takes place over the course of a year. You know, if you like Woody Allen, definitely check it out. You can't go wrong. And, of course, there's the 1987 holiday classic Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
That's a good one right there.
Yes.
And the audience agrees.
All right. You know, written and directed by John Hughes, starring Steve Martin and John Candy. To hear more about this film, it is available on Talking Pictures, which is also available on the Just a Phase Network.
Those aren't pillows!
Oh, my goodness. How about them bears?
Great, great. Oh, great movie.
Oh, love it.
If you've never seen it, you should definitely see it. It should be a yearly viewing.
Hell yeah.
As part of your Thanksgiving.
It is part of mine. Let's see, yeah. Son of a Woman, Martin Brest's film.
The movie that ruined Al Pacino. Yeah. Ever since it, he doesn't know how not to overact now. And that's because of Son of a Woman. Well, he won an award for it. He was like,
award, yeah.
He pulled a Sally Field, and now he's like mutated into like this horrible block of cheddar cheese.
Don't hold back. Let us know what you really think.
Well, that's my job here. Al Pacino sucks.
Oddly enough, Philip Seymour Hoffman was in this.
Oh, he was the jerk, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. The one that was accusing Charlie.
Yeah. Philip Seymour Hoffman is like all over this show ever since we started. So. If you're a fan, you've come to the right place. Next up.
Exactly. Don't waste your time. It's 2.5 hours of your life you'll never get back.
Oh, hey now, come on.
It was good at one time.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Yeah.
I don't think it's a very good movie that's held up very... Now I just find it painful. Mm. But it's mainly because of... Hoo-ah! Al Pacino here! Anyway, sorry.
All right, so we've got Nobody's Fool. With Paul Newman.
And Bruce Willis. And
Bruce Willis, Jessica Tandy.
Oh, Melanie Griffith.
Griffith.
You know why that she's
Philip Seymour Hoffman?
What?
Yeah.
What was he in that?
He was the cop.
What cop?
Yeah. The cop that was always harassing him about his broken taillight. And he...
Really?
Yeah. Paul Newman decked him, and that's why he went to jail.
Yeah, that's a really good movie. It's a drama, but it's kind of a dramedy.
Yeah.
Especially... Paul Newman plays an old curmudgeon that slowly kind of comes around and warms up to the people in his life.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea it was a Thanksgiving movie. Yeah. When Alex actually mentioned it earlier, I was shocked.
Yeah.
And we both were like kind of shocked that it was, because we both remembered it not being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I barely remembered the holiday taking place. But yeah, it's basically centered around 2 weeks, right around Thanksgiving. So.
Huh.
Yeah, but it's a fun movie. If you haven't seen it for a while, or if you've never seen it, definitely go check it out.
Yeah, it is. It's real good.
Yeah.
It'll get you in the mood for winter, too.
Hell yeah.
It's kind of like a grumpy old man, to where it's like always snowy and always, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It just does a good job of capturing that winter vibe.
Yeah. Speaking of the winter vibe, you've got the ice storm.
Speaking of one to swallow a shotgun, you have the ice storm.
Directed by Ang Lee.
Who the fuck would ever want to watch that movie on during the holidays? Because if you're like, you know, struggling with taking your life or something, and sorry. Yeah. Anyway,
you're looking for an excuse not to live. Obviously, it's a drama.
Were you a fan of that movie?
I remember, you know, when I saw it initially back in '97. I really enjoyed the hell out of it. I will still say that it's one of Ang Lee's better American films.
Yeah, that's like saying, well, that piece of turd smells better than the rest.
You've got an all-star cast. I mean, you got Tobey Maguire, Katie Holmes, Kevin Kline, Joan Allen, Christina Ricci,
Weaver.
Elijah Wood, Sigourney Weaver. I'm surprised Philip Seymour Hoffman isn't in the damn thing.
I bet he was. Yeah. He was probably driving around outside a couple of the houses he just got unbuilt just to be a part of everything.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, that movie is... That is not a good movie. I mean, it's an okay drama.
Yeah.
But I remember when I saw it, mm-hmm. and my initial reaction, this was back when I actually liked dramas,
yeah.
and my initial reaction was, really? That's what everyone's going goo-goo ah-ah about? Because everyone went apeshit over that movie.
Yeah. I think I just got lucky and probably saw it like the Monday after it came out or something.
Maybe you did.
I didn't get
it. Because by the time I saw it,
I was probably part of the hype as opposed to being.
And like it had already been up for.
Yeah.
Well, I think they were saying that it was going to be up for some Oscars, but was it actually up for Best Picture?
I don't know if it was up for Best Picture, but yeah, I think that Kevin Kline or Sigourney Weaver might have been up for Best Actor or something like that.
I mean, they did. It had good acting. I mean,
oh, yeah.
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 Yeah. A little on the depressing side. Just a tad. So if you haven't taken your medication, you might really enjoy it. Check out the ice storm.
Yeah.
Feel good.
Good times. Yeah.
Good times.
Make you feel better about your own life.
Yeah.
We
had to get Celebrate by Kool and the Gang and insert it right there. Down, 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 down. Come on! That's a perfect outdoor music for Ice Storm.
Oh, perfect, yeah. All right. And speaking of Sigourney Weaver, my next film, Tadpole.
Man, all yours are interconnected. It's so impressive.
Hey, you know, what can I say? Yeah, you've got Aaron Stanford, who was essentially the title character. He's a 15-year-old boy who's been away at boarding school, but he's got this just total obsession with his new stepmother. Played by Sigourney Weaver.
Like an unhealthy obsession?
Not completely unhealthy, but a little less than healthy. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So we're not talking spanking the monkey unhealthy.
No.
Okay. Just thought, you know, I mean,
yeah.
We don't want people like, you know, I've never heard of this holiday classic, and I heard it on that podcast, let's go rent it and bop it in and be in for some surprises, you know what I'm saying? So, let me just clarify that one for a little bit.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, John Ritter plays his father. B.B. Newworth plays Sigourney Weaver's best friend, who ends up kind of having an affair with Aaron Stanford. But, you know, it's a comedy. It's, you know, got some dramatic moments to it. But overall, you know, yeah, it's a comedy. And oddly enough, I mean, I'd seen it on the shelf a few times, thought about picking it up, finally did this year just to have something to review. And shit, I was really impressed by it, so...
Nice, I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, definitely. And oddly enough, it was done by the same guy who did Bride Wars that I saw you posting about.
And my daughter loved Bride Wars.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, just kind of the honorable mention as far as holiday films go, because you've got Rocky, you know, the John G. Avildsen, Sylvester Stallone classic. You know, pretty much picks up around Thanksgiving and goes through about New Year's Eve, so you know you can pretty much just pull that movie out and get the most bang for your buck, because it covers every holiday right between now and just January. You know, of course, you know, you got Burgess Meredith, who I'll be talking about here in another minute. You know, Burt Young, Talia Shire, Carl Weathers, great movie. If you haven't seen it for a while, take a look. Another honorable mention, She's Gotta Have It. This was essentially Spike Lee's first feature film. It was cool to go back and watch this again, because I hadn't seen it in a number of years. And you're just going, wow, Spike Lee really was good, wasn't he?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I don't even want to go back. I mean, really, the only thing he ever did that I enjoyed was Do the Right Thing.
That was a good movie. That one and Mo' Better Blues.
Yes, even that one didn't do a whole lot for me. Mm-hmm. But
you know, of course, you know, Spike Lee as Morris Blackman. I mean, it's just, it's fun. Again, if you've never seen it, check it out. You know, if you haven't seen it in a while, good news, it still holds up. So, you know, if you kind of find yourself straying from the Spike Lee bandwagon, I don't blame you. But, you know, here's the reason why you were on it to begin with. So, go check it out. And then finally, you got Grumpy Old Men. Again, it's one of those more bang for the buck. Something I didn't realize before I was researching for this show, it was written by Mark Steven Johnson, who's the same guy that did Ghost Rider and Daredevil.
Wow, what?
Yeah, I know.
But he wrote that before those.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he wrote this back in 93.
Huh.
Yeah. But
that's very interesting.
Yeah, you know, yeah, you've got Jack
Lemmon. Grumpy Old Men's great.
Oh, yeah. Jack Lemmon, Walter Matthau, together again.
Yeah, Anne Margaret.
Anne Margaret, Burgess Meredith, Ossie Davis.
And Burgess Meredith stole the freaking
movie. Oh, he was great. Yeah.
He's great as the dirty old grandpa. And, yeah, I haven't seen that movie in a long time. I love that movie, though. I used to watch it yearly, I mean.
Mm-hmm. That's another one.
I need to revisit it again.
More bang for your buck, because it starts off on Thanksgiving and ends on Christmas. So.
Huh.
So, yeah, that brings me to the end of my holiday films.
Bam. All right, well, that leads us up to Hidden Gems! Sorry. I got a little excited because I finally get to talk.
Hey, all right. Take it away!
My Hidden Gem is the Thanksgiving holiday movie that I was able to watch. It's called Pieces of April.
Love this movie.
Directed by Peter Hodges, who also did Dan in Real Life and The Odd Life of Timothy Green.
Mm-hmm. He also wrote What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
Ah, well, we won't hold that against him. stars Katie Holmes and Oliver Platt and Patricia Clarkson.
Yeah.
And basically, Katie Holmes plays kind of the black sheep daughter who decides that she's going to fix Thanksgiving dinner for her family.
Mm-hmm.
Her family's kind of an upscale family. The mom is essentially dying of cancer, and the movie kind of follows the parallel between Katie Holmes' adventures of trying to prepare this dinner, because she lives in, like, this tiny apartment, and, like, she realizes her oven is broke, so she's got to go around and try to get other people to help her to where she's able to, you know, get things done that she needs to get done, because she's been a screw-up and her family's coming, so she has to get this done.
Mm-hmm.
And it also keeps cutting away and follows the travails of the family getting there, and, like, them going by Krispy Kreme before, because, you know, the daughter's cooking, yeah. And the thing I love about this movie is the first time you're watching it, you keep thinking it's going to go to these dark places.
Mm-hmm.
And it never does.
Yeah.
It always kind of just, it pulls, you know, the wool out and, well, it doesn't pull the wool out. It's not like a destroyer of coats. But, you know, it reveals that, you know, you were the one being cynical. Yeah, it's a really good movie. Hardly anyone's heard of it.
Yeah.
But I would...
Those who have enjoyed it.
Yeah, I haven't met anyone that's watched it that didn't like it.
Yeah.
So, if you're looking for a new one to enter the, you know, Thanksgiving rotation, give it a shot.
Hell yeah.
And it's only an hour and 19 minutes.
Really?
Yeah. It's super short, so...
Wow, I thought it was at least like 90 nope. or an hour 40.
Nope. Wow. So...
My hidden gem this week is Home for the Holidays.
Oh, another good one.
Oh, hell yeah. directed by Jodie Foster. Written by W.D. Richter, who, interestingly enough, was one of the writers for Big Trouble in Little China.
Huh.
And he also, of course, he directed The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension.
It's amazing that Home for the Holidays isn't weirder. Probably should be.
Well, it's based off a short story, so you know, you kind of had a guideline to go with. But yeah, it stars Holly Hunter, who goes home for the holidays. You know, her parents are, you know, Anne Bancroft and Charles Durning, and just
Charles Durning's great.
Oh, he is as usual. Just great. Yeah,
he
yeah.
plays the perfect oblivious dad. Yeah,
yeah. Robert Downey Jr. plays her brother. You know, of course, he's stealing every scene that he's in.
Yeah, he's great.
You know, Claire Danes is her daughter, who ends up staying home to have Thanksgiving dinner with her boyfriend.
And informs her that she's going to sleep with her boyfriend, like, right as the mom's getting ready to get on the airplane. Yeah. And it's like the opening scene of the movie, so I'm not really spoiling anything. Yeah. But yeah, so it's really about, like, Holly Hunter, how she kind of transgresses back to, like, childhood and the yeah. teenager, and kind of does some growing up and then becomes a more mm-hmm. stable adult.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's great. Great.
Oh, totally loved it. Yeah.
It's very a dysfunctional family. But
I think it's one of the reasons why I relate to it so well. So,
yeah. Probably.
So ever since 95, this thing has been in rotation at my house. So, yeah, definitely check it out. You know, if you don't have one of those happy, feel-good families, then, yeah, you'll relate like hell to it. So,
and even if you do have a happy, feel-good family, but appreciate dark humor, you'll like it.
Oh, okay.
I come from a functional family, and I enjoy the crap out of the movies. So.
Really? How's that work? Okay.
It's fun. All right, bye. All right, next up we got Recently Viewed. Figured if you are in the mood for something other than a Thanksgiving movie, I've watched some that I can throw your way. One is The Reef. It's a 2010 movie. Directed by Andrew Trucke. I think that's the way you pronounce it. He's Australian.
Okay.
Especially about this group of five or six people that go out on this yacht. They hit this reef. The boat flips over. They're out in the middle of nowhere. And most of them decide to try to swim to this island that they know isn't, that should be about 4 to 6 miles away.
Yeah.
And then, you know, some of them decide to stay on the boat. Well, basically in these waters, there's great white sharks.
Of course.
And, this was basically the movie that Open Water should have been.
Oh, wow.
It's good.
I was going to say, it's kind of like the Poseidon Adventure meets Open Water.
No, because like the tipping of the boat yeah. is strictly to present the situation.
Just
of
catalyst. Okay.
What the hell are you going to do?
Okay.
There's no excitement. I mean, actually, yeah, anyway.
Cool.
You could tell it's low budget because there's like, you know, a lot of it's inferred. But you can also tell that there's a real great white that they filmed with these actors. There's no CGI.
Yeah.
And like, it'll dip under and you see this thing swim by, and you can tell it's a real shark, so.
Damn.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that's some kind of trick of photography or whatever, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen it twice, and I would recommend it. It's on Netflix, so. If you got Netflix, look it up. Check it out.
Yeah.
Next up, I watched The Watch.
The Watch.
The one with Ben Stiller, Vince Vaughn, Jonah Hill. Yeah, this movie is so weird. It is tonally all over the place, especially about this group of guys that form a neighborhood watch
mm-hmm.
and realize that, like, there's an alien invasion. That makes it seem like a different movie than it actually is.
Yeah.
This movie's like, really struggles the entire time to find what tone it is. I mean, because it's really filthy.
Yeah.
Like, just crude to be crude. I mean, one of the writers was Seth Rogen. And he doesn't know how to write a screenplay that isn't just crude to be crude.
Yeah.
That being said, in all fairness, I did laugh. And, you know, I laughed fairly consistently. I thought Jonah Hill was great, and I can't believe I'm saying it, but he was actually pretty funny. He plays like this...
Jonah Hill?
Yeah, he was like, he's like this mentally unstable like guy that really wants to be a cop, but... He didn't pass the psych test part of it, so now he's just kind of bitter. So, but he, like, his character says things and does things throughout the movie where you're kind of like, yeah, I'm kind of glad he failed that test, you know? I mean...
Because it says, between Jonah Hill and Seth Rogen, you just lost me.
Well, he's not... Seth Rogen isn't in it. He just co-wrote it.
Still.
Yeah, I'm not... let's be clear, I'm not trying to hook you or reel you in and tell you to go watch it.
Good.
I'm saying, if you saw the previews in a... You thought it looked interesting, it's worth a buck. If you're interested in filmmaking and want to see what a failure looks like as far as tone, it's interesting to watch because it tries to like pull your heartstrings at times. It tries to be really, like, crude. Mm-hmm. Tries to be, like, the sci-fi action-y thing. I mean, it's just really weird.
Oddly enough, I did see the preview for it, and even the preview looked all over the place.
Yeah.
Because at first I was kind of going, oh, okay, it'll be kind of lighthearted, and it's like, well, no, now it's kind of like action sci-fi. It's like, okay, now it's comedy. Now it's like Ghostbusters, but now it's like...
Okay, you know what?
You know, I was kind of going...
instead of Ghostbusters... Flip a coin,
pick a direction, you know?
The movie it reminded me most was The Burbs.
Okay.
Did you ever see that?
I did.
Okay, you know how that was kind of tonally all over the place?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I liked The Burbs.
Yeah, so did I.
I didn't like The Watch, so that's the distinction. But it, anyway, I watched again The Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I gotta say, I thoroughly enjoyed it more the second time.
Okay.
I might like it more than the other three.
Wow.
In my opinion.
Okay.
I mean, I was shocked by how much I enjoyed it the second time.
Yeah.
I really wasn't looking forward to...
Yeah, because I remember you saying when you saw it the first time around, it's like, it was okay.
It was okay.
So yeah, I was really surprised you and this bothered time, to watch it a second time.
My wife wanted to see it again. And I didn't dislike it. Yeah. And a lot of times, like this, if I give something that second shot, mm-hmm. I can, you know, now that I know what to expect, I was able to appreciate it for what it was and find things about it that I kind of overlooked the first time. And,
okay.
You know, because expectations or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I thought it was good. Oh, solid.
Okay.
Then I got a documentary I watched called The Other F Word. You ever heard of this?
I've heard of the title. I know I've never seen it.
It's directed by Andrea Blegrund Nevins.
Okay.
Pardon the pronunciation. Basically, it's a documentary about punk rockers who are parents or dads. And yeah. It's got members from Everclear. It's got Flea. It's got Tony Hawk in it.
Oh, shit.
It's got members from The Vandals, Blink-182, Bad Religion, Black Flag. But it mainly follows Pennywise. Are you familiar with them?
Yeah.
The lead singer has two kids, and it really, he's the one that it kind of arcs with the film, and essentially he ends up quitting the band because he wants to spend more time with his kids and decides to just be with his family, and he's just done with the touring thing, you know, and he's constantly being badgered by the band members to go tour more because the more they tour, the more money they're making.
Hell yeah.
Because they ain't making no money on CDs anymore.
Nope.
And he doesn't want to be away. And it basically kind of chronicles, and in 1 year, he's gone, like, over 200 days out of that 365 days. You know, completely removed from his family and his wife and the home that they live in, you know, to where, I mean, you are literally a stranger to your family. So I found it very interesting being a father myself. Yeah. And, man, I thought it was good.
Okay.
I would recommend it.
Because I was thinking, it's like, all right, you know, it's like you've given up your main means of supporting your family in order to spend time with said family, but it's like you're kind of cutting your own throat. You
know? And that's essentially, you know, that's kind of the curse.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of them talk about.
Okay.
Is you have to be away from your kids in order to provide for your kids.
Yeah.
But, yeah. It's good. Oh, and I also saw Killer Joe.
What'd you think?
Yeah. It's a movie. I would probably recommend it to the right person.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to sit here and say that I had a blast watching it,
mm-hmm.
but I'm definitely not going to say I was ever bored.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of what you're talking about earlier, the acting is outstanding.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely more of the Bug William Friedkin than, say, the French Connection William Friedkin. So.
Well, you can definitely tell it's a play.
Yeah.
I thought it was way better than Bug. I thought it was very entertaining. Yeah. It made me laugh.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought it did a really good job of being a dark comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, it's one of those that you're almost ashamed to admit that you kind of liked it more than you might actually want to admit that you did. So, yeah, I would, especially if you're a Matthew McConaughey fan, it's a double feature with Magic Mike right there. Right there. That's all I'm saying. Bam.
So is that your next one you're going to talk about here, Magic Mike?
Yeah, Magic Mike is no. No, you're never going to hear that. Even if I see it, I'll never talk about it on here. I will not admit that publicly. And I have not. Hey, you're the one I
like. I want to share your love tonight. All right. So, that's our show. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Hope you all have a happy and safe Thanksgiving. And
gobble, gobble, gobble.
Anything to add besides the gobbling?
No.
All right.
Have a good one.
Yep. We'll see you next time.
Happy we stole your country, though.
This has been a Phase Media Podcast. Find us online at justaphase.com. That's Phase with a mother effin' F. Phase.